96.5 FM in Sarasota, and WBPVLP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Ed James III with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, April 30th. The Florida legislature yesterday gave final approval to a congressional redistricting map proposed by Governor Ron DeSantis. The map is expected to create four additional Republican-leaning seats, which will increase the party's chances of maintaining control of Congress in the November elections. Locally, the map alters the boundaries for District 17, which covers Sarasota County. 17 will lose the county's eastern areas. District 16, covering Manatee County, will lose parts of Hillsborough County and add eastern Sarasota, DeSoto, and Hardy counties, as well as portions of Polk County. Democrats have protested the redistricting as a power grab, and several advocacy groups have announced plans to file lawsuits. The approval follows a U.S. Supreme Court decision that weakened the 1965 Voting Rights Act. The Minnesota Association for the Study of African Life and History has received a significant grant to expand its programs. The nonprofit will use the $450,000 grant from the Baranczyk Foundation to broaden Black history education and outreach through the region. United Way Suncoast has selected a new president to lead the organization. The nonprofit announced it has hired the impact officer of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to serve in the top leadership role. Courtney Sanchez will oversee operations across a multi-county region that includes Sarasota and Manatee. The appointment comes as the organization continues its focus on community health, education, and financial stability programs. Citing financial uncertainty due to possible state-imposed property tax cuts, Sarasota County Commissioners are taking a cautious approach to future funding for the development of the Bay Park near downtown Sarasota. In their meeting last week, the commissioners decided to review the financial commitments associated with the multi-phase waterfront project. The county is expected to provide one quarter of the $200 million project. While the project continues to move forward, commissioners said tax increment funding from properties in that area will shrink if the governor succeeds with his property tax cut plans. Health experts are reporting an early start to tick season in Florida. A warm winter has led to an increase in tick activity sooner than in previous years. Medical professionals are advising residents to take precautions when spending time outdoors, such as checking for ticks on clothing and skin to prevent the transmission of illnesses. This has been Ed James III with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, April 30th.
This is Stephanie Wells, Executive Director of Pacifica Foundation. Congress has defunded public media, threatening the survival of television and radio stations that provide trusted news, emergency alerts, and vital community connection. Years of corporate media consolidation and deregulation have taken media out of community hands, while social media platforms cut back on fact-checking, leaving communities vulnerable to misinformation. In this time of social crisis and climate emergencies, local stations provide vital information for keeping our community safe. You can help by supporting and donating to your local community media. This message comes to you in solidarity from the Pacifica Foundation.
Truly Valued is a nonprofit serving Sarasota, Manatee, and DeSoto counties through youth leadership, mentoring, family support, and restorative justice programs. Their work includes youth development through IM Academy, mentoring and prevention through Youth Empowerment Services, family strengthening through the Nurturing Families Program, and restorative justice through RISE Academy. These programs support youth, families, and justice-involved individuals in building life skills, strengthening relationships, and creating positive paths forward in their community. For more information about Truly Valued and its programs, visit trulyvalued.org.
Welcome to The Detail. I'm your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. With me today is Jimmy Glover. Jimmy Glover is a candidate for school board And before we get talking, I do need to say the views and opinions of hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR staff or volunteers. And WSLR is supported by listeners like you. Thank you so much for coming through during our recent fund drive. And by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2025-26 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. Okay, so we had a little bit of a wonky start because the microphones weren't lined up, but we're here, and Jimmy Glover is in the house. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Kathy. I'm really excited to be here today.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you. Well, let's start. You're running for school board. So it's like the beginning of all my candidate interviews, and you're running for District 1 in the Sarasota County School Board, and District 1 is Bridget Ziegler's seat. Her name, yeah, I'll tell you, even people who pay like zero attention, they're like, isn't that the one? And I'm like, yeah, that's right. And they know a lot about Mrs. Ziegler, even on a national level. And I think, Jimmy, there, may I call you Jimmy?
Yes,
that's my dad's name, by the way, my dad and my brother.
Jimmy. It's not James, it's actually Jimmy.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So I think there's just a fatigue that a lot of people have in Sarasota County with school board drama. I think there's a fatigue nationally with how school boards have become epicenters of drama. So it's great to have a candidate who you have served on a local advisory board. I'd love you to tell us about that. But before we get into that and the drama stuff, how long have you lived here and why are you running?
All right. So thanks for the question. I've lived in Sarasota now for a little over 10 years. I moved here from Fort Lauderdale when my wife and I were looking to move. We were looking at school districts to find mm-hmm. out what would be best for our kids. We have four kids.
I did the same.
Yeah,
yep.
Four kids.
You have four.
Yeah.
I have How four. Old are they?
I have four kids. My oldest is 26. I have a 23-year-old, mm-hmm. a 21-year-old, and an 18-year-old who is going to be graduating in about a couple weeks, which is interesting for me to say. I can't believe it's happening, but it's happening and it's coming.
So you're
quickly.
Still in the trenches, but you're almost out.
I'm almost out.
Yeah.
I literally just came back from a college visit yesterday with my daughter, and she will be making her final decision later on today about where she'll be.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you
so
much.
Yeah.
My reason for running is I noticed when I was doing a little bit more of a deep dive. I live in Newtown.
Mm-hmm.
When I started looking at the reading levels in Newtown compared to the rest of Sarasota County, I was a little bit disturbed that our reading levels were a little bit lower.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to do something to change that.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way I felt I could change that was to get more involved in the community. I did that by a friend of mine wanted to open up a school in Newtown to help those students who were struggling. And I was all on board with that, just really just finding a solution to a problem that we were having.
Mm-hmm.
Then that elevated to now running for school board because I felt that Bridget was not really focused in on student-centered outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that we needed someone to run against her, and I would be that person to run against her.
Okay.
I did not agree with her policies at all.
Yeah, so we are, we realize we're having some technical difficulties here, and Jesse Coleman is coming in to help. So let me ask you, Jimmy, you know, one of the things that I've taken issue with or have noticed is, and Mrs. Ziegler is a big example of this, is kind of a strategy to just attack public schools. And the thing about public schools, and I saw this example on social media, one of my friends put it on there, that there was a guy attacking public schools, and he was like, I'm a businessman, and I run a big business, and I know what I'm doing, blah, 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 that, which is great, okay? And he made yogurt. And this woman in the audience said to him, when you're making blueberry yogurt, and you get a bad batch of blueberries from your supplier, just because they're just not that great, maybe they're a little overripe or underripe, or what do you do with them? And the guy knew that he was caught, and he said, we get rid of them. And she said, yeah, right. Well, we take every kid. We take the kids with learning disabilities. We take the kids with behavior problems. We take every kid. And the thing for me that has me so concerned about Bridget's rhetoric and her followers is the disrespect for every child. Meaning, by trashing public schools, it's a far more complicated issue than they want to oversimplify things. Is that every kid has potential. And you have to dig for that potential. So when you're just trashing a school because its reading scores aren't what you want them to be, you're not looking under the hood and going, okay. I mean, if you looked at where I went to school, you know, economic level, we were fortunate, is the highest predictor of academic success. It's the academic level of the parents. Well, probably because they were academically successful, right? So how do you square that with test scores are important? We've got this strategy out there. It's a tough environment to be running for school board. Their rhetoric, the rhetoric of that particular thought world, sounds reasonable, but how do you counter that?
Right. Does it really sound reasonable?
Well, it doesn't
sound reasonable to me.
Yeah.
What I'll say is this: is that let's first start off. You mentioned Bridget Ziegler. There's a lot to unpack here, so I'll start off with Bridget Ziegler.
Yeah.
She doesn't even have her own children in the public school system, so
right.
I don't believe she is fully invested in fighting for public education.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first problem that I have.
Mm-hmm.
I have four kids who went through the public school system. So I feel that I am more of an expert on what the public school needs, especially my kids went to a Title I school. So I see things every day that happen with these kids. I know what it takes for some of these kids to get up and go to school. Some of these kids are going to school and they don't have food. There's a number of different circumstances that go into it. This business person, I think that's the big problem that we have right now. There's this whole big thing that everything could be run like a business, and it can't.
Mm-hmm.
Businesses are run like businesses.
Yeah.
Public education is run totally different. There are different things that you have to look at when concerning public education.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very upset by the fact and the rhetoric going on that public schools are not the answer. And now we're just giving up on public schools. They've been the answer for years. They've been the answer for when you went to school, for when I went to school, and all of a sudden now things have just changed. Like whatever we were teaching before no longer works.
You know, Jefferson wanted a public education system. Thomas Jefferson. I went to the University of Virginia, which he founded. But so from the very inception of the country, there was a desire and there was a recognition that the success of a country depends on an educated population. So it is concerning. I'll tell you, I was watching a video about AI, the future of AI, and there was a Google executive and he was just basically being asked, it was called Silicon Valley Girl, and she was asking this Google executive about what her kids should be learning in this context. Like, we have a real shifting landscape right now, or even the adults. We just don't know exactly how that's going to impact our world. But one of his comments, she was talking about public education and, you know, what should my kids be learning? But he made the comment. He said, do you really think people in leadership want a smart population? He said, I think they don't. And I have to, you know, it took me back. Although when I look at the strategies around privatizing education, how hedge funds are using charter school leases as investment vehicles, which take tons of money out of school. Even the charter school isn't getting the money for public for their education. I wouldn't quite call it public because they don't take every kid, but those school leases can take 40% of the budget, and they're being used as financial instruments by hedge funds are buying it up. My sister teaches in Connecticut. The second largest lobbying group in the state of Connecticut are hedge funds lobbying for charter schools. Why? They want a guaranteed return on investment. So in that environment, what are your thoughts about how do we preserve public education? And why should we? I mean, do you buy the idea that we should be skeptical about our government leaders wanting good education? Or do you take the point of that Google executive like, hey, you really should question whether they want people to be smart?
So I'm always a firm believer of, you know, watch what they do, not what they say. Mm-hmm. So what they're telling us is that public education is bad. They go about naming these schools, you have schools of hope, Success Academy, all this stuff. They put this stuff in the names, but they don't actually believe that stuff. Like you said, underneath it all, there's nothing but a profit play for them. And that's concerning. So we, as the public, we as concerned parents need to be doing a little bit more of a deep dive into what they're selling us. That's the key. Why are you selling us public education? Public education doesn't need to be sold. We are not commodities. Public education is not a commodity, and that's what the issue is. They've turned public education into something it should not be, and they're trying to convince us all that public education is not the way to go, even though it's been the way to go for years and years. But now people are seeing that there is money in public education, and they want to get to that pot of money, like you said, that guaranteed money. Mm-hmm. And we as parents, and we as concerned citizens and taxpayers need to call them out on it.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things I find really interesting is, well, and I'm going to bring us into school voucher territory, because Sarasota County Schools is facing a $45 million shortfall, money that has left the district due to school vouchers that were, you know, brought online. It's expanded in 2023. Most of the kids that are using those school vouchers were never in public school to begin with. Most of the kids, about two-thirds of them, were already in private school. So for their parents, I mean, those parents, their accountants would be telling them, you'd be crazy not to take this money. It's $8,000 per kid. It's tax-free. It defrays the cost of your private school tuition. Of course they're going to take it. Maybe a third of the kids are actually were in public school, and now they're going to a different, you know, voucher school or private school, maybe a charter school. But I believe these are all these scholarships or vouchers are going to private school. So private schools don't have the same metrics or standards. They're not held to the same standards. And if you actually look at outcomes, I don't believe there's any evidence. If you remove the economic advantage, if you take that variable out, statistically, I don't see that there's any evidence that they actually perform better than public schools. So is that your experience, and what are your thoughts on vouchers and how to address the shortfall?
Right. So vouchers have become the big boogeyman here in this whole culture war thing. You know, vouchers bad, vouchers good. The voucher system could be fixed with one simple solution. It used to be for underserved communities. Now, what they ended up doing is they took the income restriction off of that voucher. When they took the income restriction off of the voucher, mm-hmm. that's when we see the explosion of people utilizing them. Like you said, about 70% of families that are using the vouchers were already in the in private schools to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is
it's free money for them.
Well, listen, as a person, as a parent, I'm sure they would want to take advantage of something like that. But you know what? If you put the income restriction back on that voucher, mm-hmm. now they cannot use that money. Now all that money will now come pouring back into the public school system where it belongs. Secondly, the accountability, the computer system that they use to account for this. So, for example, if someone utilizes that voucher and say my child decides they want to go to the private school, but then one day later they miss their friends and they want to go back to the public school.
Mm.
Well, that money has already been pulled out.
And
right now,
back.
There is no set timetable as far as when that money will come back to the public school.
Mm.
That's a problem. That's mm-hmm. an issue. So if this is going to be the law in Florida, then let's go ahead and fix the system so that everybody's playing by the same rules. That's the issue.
What about fixing it so that, you know, in my world, I feel like if you're taking my tax dollar, you should meet the same standard. So, you know, private school, you need to be reporting your data. You need to be taking the same tests. You need to be having the same credentials when it comes to teaching, because I don't see why a private school would get a pass on education standards if they're getting public money.
I'm in total agreement with that. And once again, that's part of the problem. They have these names, Success Academy, Schools of
right,
Hope,
yeah.
and all that type of stuff. But
right.
we as parents and we as citizens have to hold them accountable. We're talking about teachers who are not certified. They don't go by any sort of standards. Where does that work at in any walk of life, that you're going to hand over your kids to a school that doesn't have a teacher who's gone through the whole process, has gone to college, has gone to teaching school, anything like that, to just a business person who feels that they could do it better? That's
yeah.
not right. We as parents have to do better.
You know, I can hear the argument, and I think there's some validity to it, that, you know, talented adults who haven't necessarily gone through education training can have a lot to offer as teachers. You know, if they know their subject and all of that. I do think there's good arguments to make for having some flexibility when it comes to standards. But right now it's kind of it's a free for all. There is no requirement. I think that needs to change. But the best example I've ever heard, and like I've said, you know, when you compare the outcomes of, and you take out the economic advantage that the children that come from economically, you know, higher income homes, that's the biggest predictor of success in reading in school. When you take out those variables, there's no evidence that charter schools or many private schools, they don't demonstrate better outcomes. The fact is, we are going to have people who don't read at a certain level. We haven't found the magic key, and the private schools haven't either. And if they have, then we need to be following what they're doing. But so far, we're not seeing that. The best example I've seen of this Schools of Hope idea that you're talking about is Jefferson County Schools. And for regular listeners, I'm sure you've heard me say this before, but it's an example that bears repeating. It was Richard Corcoran's baby when he was the commissioner. He started Speaker of the House advocating for this program when he was Commissioner of Education. They implemented it starting in like 2017, 2018 in Jefferson County. The thing about Jefferson County was it's a poor district, small school, K through 12, one building. And they always struggled with reading scores. So third grade reading, which Richard Corcoran, one thing we agree on is third grade reading scores are really important. You want to get kids reading by third grade. And the third grade reading score is when the Schools of Hope program, where Richard Corcoran took over, his program did. It was an academic school. The third grade reading was at 42% proficiency. By the end, in 5 years, it was down to 19%. 19%. And they had all, so there's this, now people said, well, you know, they got a lot of new buildings and they upgraded things, and that's great. We need good facilities. And there is something that parents like, and I get it, about putting a kid in a uniform and sending them to school, right? So there's this outer picture that a Schools of Hope charter school environment offers. But it was the most dismal failure. And then after that, they were rigging a contract for one of Richard Corcoran's friends to get the consulting contract when it was being turned over back to, you know, the public sector, the school board. So we have an example in Florida of an entire district, the entire district going in this charter school direction, and it was a terrible failure. Have you looked at how charter schools are performing in Sarasota? Are they doing any better, or do we know?
Well, there's, you have to, when you talk about charter schools, so we have the public charter schools that the district has some control over.
You mean like the organic Sarasota Military Academy?
Yeah, Sarasota Military Academy.
School of Arts. I'm talking about, I should say, corporate.
Yes.
Corporate charter schools.
Yeah, so as far as the corporate charter ones, because there's no data. That's the issue. There's no accountability. We don't know how they're doing. They don't have to report to anything. All we've asked, in my conversations that I've had with the superintendent, all he's asked for is that we want to level the playing field. Let it be competitive. Let them have the same standards that we have as public schools. And if everything is fair, we're cool. We want to be competitive. That's all we ask for, is that the accountability is the same. Mm. Now, as far as the reading scores and reading levels that you talked about, now that really starts at home with parents. And so we're, yes, we want all our children to be on third grade reading level, but that also starts with parents. And then when you're talking about two income households, there's usually a parent around to maybe when that kid comes home from school to help them with reading. Unfortunately, in underserved communities, both parents might be working. If there are both parents in the household,
grandma might be taking care of that kid. Yeah.
So when that kid comes home from school, there's nobody who's sitting there with that child reading through whatever he needs to read through. So that, see, we talk about it. You cannot sit there. These corporations try to act like education can be made better through spreadsheets and data and all this stuff. They're just looking at a computer screen saying this, and know what we'll do. Then we'll open up a new shiny building, and then education will automatically be better. It takes time for your kids to learn how to read. It takes investment.
Yeah,
you know, we need to invest in it. Do you know how many kids in Title I schools come to school hungry? That affects kids' learning abilities. So people don't talk about that type of stuff, and we need to start talking about that stuff. That's the type of stuff that's not on spreadsheets. That's not the type of stuff that they think about when they want to open up their Success Academy or their School of Hope.
Yeah, well, half the kids, right? Half are on a free or reduced lunch in Sarasota County. So
it's a tale of two cities in Sarasota County. It's 50% below poverty level, and the other 50% are rich. We're a very rich county.
Yeah,
but we also, we're a poor county, and we need to do the things to help out those who don't have.
So we're a rich county that, for the better part, I think over two decades now, has committed extra tax money to funding public schools. So I think, people who have more here understand why they have more and want to share that. And they want, frankly, there's self-interest involved. If I'm at SMH, I want the people taking care of me, from the person bringing my food to the nursing staff, everybody, to have a good education, right? So let's talk about Mike Moran, because Sarasota County taxpayers have designated an extra mill, an extra percentage point of their taxes to go to public education. And the first time in the over two decade history of this additional money for education, our new tax collector, Mike Moran, is being sued by the Sarasota County School Board because he's held back $2 million for his office costs to collect the tax, which I think is just incredible. Did you watch the school board discussion about this, or, you know, how this came about? Just share with us, our listeners, what your thoughts are.
So the fact that he wants to take $2 million from our public schools is appalling. My question for him would be, why? Why are you doing this? And what is it for? You know, give us your reasoning for wanting to do this, because we've never done this in, you said, what, 23 years?
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Right. Now, I mean, the problem, too, is that had the taxpayers of Sarasota known that, hey, you know what, we're going to go ahead and approve this, and the taxpayer is going to take his commission, maybe it would have been a different story. Maybe the vote would have ended up differently, because we're all under the impression that
all the money, right,
all of the money was going to go towards the school district.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a big issue. That's a big issue for the taxpayers. And I was in that meeting when Superintendent Connor did the slideshow about that. And the audience was appalled by it. They were highly upset. And a lot of people were like, I did not know this was happening. How can this happen? The citizens of Sarasota are very upset by this. And we, as citizens of Sarasota, need to let Mike Moran know that we are not having it. You will not take money from the public school district to go to whatever county vanity project that you want to do.
So Mike Moran, he came into office. So the school millage was reapproved the same year Mike Moran was elected as tax collector. So in 2024, he, you know, won his bid. He beat Barbara Ford Coates narrowly. She had been the tax collector for decades here. And then the school millage was also approved. I think it was the fifth time, fourth or fifth time. Anyway, so he began his term about a year and a half ago, and the school board suing for $2 million. But just so listeners understand, he's on track to hold back another $4 million over the course of his term because, you know, we're still looking at 2.5 years with Mr. Moran in that position, and possibly longer if he's reelected, right? So he says that it's only going to be so far $800,000 that $1.2 million is going to be given back. You know, he was quoted as saying that in a news report. But to your point, it's been the long established practice that the tax collector is not charging for collecting that tax. And that wasn't part of the referendum, which it would seem to me it would have to be put in there that some of the money would go toward his administrative costs.
There's always a disclaimer somewhere.
Yeah.
That we could read it, but there's not a disclaimer in there. So, my question for him would be, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you doing this? What's it going to be used for? And know what? More importantly, when do we get the money back? So you're saying, oh, well, they'll get some of that money back. But you know what? We're trying to plan a budget as a school board as to what we need to do. As a result, we are potentially having to lay off teachers because we don't know when that money's going to come back. It's almost like the voucher system. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, you take the money out, but it's like there's no set timetable as to when that's coming back. But
yeah.
In the meantime, there's a whole lot of lives in the balance right now. There are a lot of teachers who don't know where they're going to be next school year.
Yeah, Superintendent Connor said that $2 million equates to about, you know, salary and benefit for at least about 20 teachers.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to refresh my memory here. What have budget cuts and layoffs looked like in terms of teacher layoffs? Because, you know, we've been told very recently that the district is going to be making cuts in staff. And this, you know, this really hurts,
right,
in terms of the classroom setting and support staff, too. What does that look like?
So in the conversations that I've had with the superintendent, He is hopeful that we will be able to place all those teachers come fall. It's layered. So what happens is that you have retirement. Well, because we are uncertain of the budget, because we have
the county voucher.
Commissioners taking money from what the budget was. The budget was already planned, and then all of a sudden, at the last minute, you're going to take $2 million from
the
budget.
Well, he's not a county commissioner anymore. He's a tax collector.
So, but what happens is this, is that the superintendent is confident that we can go ahead and get those positions back. There's going to be retirements.
Okay.
There are people leaving the state, leaving the profession. So what happens is it's a process.
So there's attrition, natural attrition.
Yeah, and it's a process. So in order for you to stay compliant, notices have to go out in a certain amount of time to stay compliant. Once again, in my conversations I've had with the superintendent, he is very hopeful that all those positions will eventually be filled.
Okay.
In addition, he's also mentioned that Manatee County, which is also growing, if they have a need for teachers as well, he has reached out to that superintendent and said, hey, in your hiring process, if we are not able to place some of our teachers here, would you be willing to place them up
in Manatee
County?
So they're networking.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, I started the show by talking about the sense of fatigue that I think a lot of people in Sarasota County have with, you know, you want a professional school board. You want a school board where there's a collegial working relationship. Disagreement's going to happen. That's less of an issue than just, I think, a very shrill, unprofessional behavior that people have seen to score political points. Recently, the pro-ICE resolution introduced by Bridget Ziegler, I think in the wake of her colleague Tom Edwards participating in a protest against the shooting of an American citizen, peacefully protesting the death of that person, two people, Renee Good and Alex Preddy. But it wasn't, you know, I take issue with the Herald Tribune's recent op-ed because they called Edwards' participation in an immigration crackdown protest. That's not the true, the whole story. The real story was, there was a dead person, you know, because they were shot by ICE. An American citizen is dead because they exercised their right to peaceful protest. So that's an example of the school board, you know, not acting as a collegial body, Bridget Ziegler calling for removal or stepping down of a colleague who differs from her quite legitimately, quite constitutionally, on a political issue. I can think of situations where, even though I think Robin Marinelli has at times gone beyond the divisive stuff, and it's been really heartening to see that, but it's been disappointing too to watch her kind of get involved in histrionic behavior.
Can I speak to you brought up
Talk
the ICE resolution and Bridget Ziegler.
Yeah.
And I've never been more disappointed in her than in that moment, because she represents District 1. District 1 and the schools in District 1 are a heavily Hispanic population.
Yeah.
The fear, let me say one more time, the fear that she invoked in that community over that resolution was uncalled for. A lot of those children who came to that school board meeting that day were my daughter's friends. And it was very upsetting that day that she put forth this resolution, and these kids, one after another, walked up to that podium, talk about how fearful they were to go to school, how fearful they were that their parents might not be home when they got back, fearful that they'd get snatched out of school. And let me be clear, ICE is not doing that. That is not the issue in school. But you know what? The fear is real.
Well, she was opening the door to that. I mean, she was basically making it sound like Sarasota County schools were just going to surrender to whatever ICE wanted, even though ICE was clearly acting They murdered an American citizen who was protesting. There was very legitimate reason for Americans to be saying, hold the phone, this organization. I mean, the leader is gone, right? And the guy who leaded that squad is gone.
As an immigrant family in Bridget Ziegler's district, mm-hmm. how would you feel if that person is calling for this ICE resolution that's
right.
potentially affect you? That's my leader. That's the person who I feel is serving the best interests of my children. That's mm-hmm. not the case. I was so disappointed that day. And on that day, I was like, we need a leadership change. We need somebody in there who's going to stand up for those children, who's going to be there for those children, who's going to say, I got your back. Those children had to come to that school board meeting that day because they felt there were no adults in the room who was going to speak up for them.
Yeah, it's important, I think, to note that federal law requires that all children in a community be educated. There's no requirement for papers at the door. And believe me, that's because children are not responsible for why they are in a place that they're in, nor should they be punished or caged, because they're in a country for whatever reason. They're not making that decision. It's been very troubling. So when, I talk about the vibe on the board and how the abandonment, in my view, of professionalism, the abandonment of just basic collegial or civil discourse when it comes to certain political agendas. You step on that board, how do you make that better? I mean, I understand that, of course, if you're there, then it's a different board. But beyond that, you're going to have people who supported that resolution on the board. How do you work with them?
Well, I tell people when I'm out here in the public talking that what's happened here in Sarasota comes down to two words, listening and trust. The vast majority of people in Sarasota County have lost trust in the school board majority right now because they feel that they're not being listened to. When you don't feel listened to, you lose trust. So the biggest thing I have to do when I'm on that board is I have to rebuild the trust of the school board in the community because right now people don't trust it. A very good example of that, we talk about school board meetings. We talk about the school board changing of the school board times. The time used to be 6 p.m.
Yeah.
Now they changed it to 10 a.m. During citizens' comment, when you feel
so, a lot of people can't go.
But during citizens' comment, mm-hmm. a lot of people got up and voiced their opinion, like, "Hey, we would like to keep it at 6 p.m."
Right.
I would say at least 95% of the people said that. But when the vote came, it came 3-2 in favor of moving the meeting. That goes to you are not listening to me. Everyone has come up and said this. You're not, talking about people from both sides. Like,
and it's a strategy because they don't want public comment. I mean, because if the public comment is calling them out, they don't care.
Exactly, but you work for the community.
Right.
If the community wants to have their meetings at 6 p.m., mm-hmm. then you need to have your meetings at 6 p.m. A lot of this stuff is very, very simple. I mean, when I'm on the school board, I've worked for United Airlines for 30 years. Mm-hmm. It's taught me leadership skills. It's taught me how to interact. Most of all, it's taught me how to interact with a lot of people.
Tell me about your professional background.
Yeah.
We had a wonky start because of the board.
No problem.
Tell me about that.
I am a flight attendant for United Airlines. I've been a flight attendant for 30 years with United Airlines. I'm based out of New Jersey.
So you're used to handling.
I'm used to handling
crazy.
Yeah,
situations.
I'm trained.
Flying has become a totally different animal.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm trained to deal with customer service. I'm trained to, if there's an emergency at 35,000 feet in the air, mm-hmm. I have as many as 300 people looking at me to make sure that they get off that plane safely.
Yeah.
Conflict management. Mm-hmm. I am trained to deal with conflict management. Obviously, I'm going to need those skills when I am on a school board. The way the current school board is made up right now, I definitely need conflict management skills. And I have listening skills. My motto is leadership that listens. I'm willing to listen to everybody.
Okay.
Let's take it all in. So let's see what the problem is.
Let's talk about this, because one of the big calling cards that has led to so much division around and nationalization of school board issues, right? We've seen school boards rise to the nightly news on major networks in this country. It's been used by a faction of the far right to inflame people, you know, because when it comes to your kids, that's just close to home. It's precious and real estate in someone's emotional life. So if you're looking to inflame people, you know, you go after those kinds of issues. So before the show, I was telling you, I grew up in a very conservative Irish Catholic family. And, you know, my parents were single issue voters when it came to abortion. And they were good people. They were like, live and let live, you know, let's respect each other. So really, I think proactively were great with us about diversity, equity, and inclusion issues before that was even a name. But my dad taught physics. He was a physics professor, and my mom got a law degree in her early 50s. They were big on education. And I think, like, so my question to you is, so I grew up in this environment where I do understand that conservative families are going to take issue with values that they feel, we're not all going to agree on sexuality. And that is another hot button issue that if you want to inflame people, gee, let's talk about sex. Well, we're not all going to agree on that. How do you make room without calling each other bigots? Because my parents were not bigots, but they would have been uncomfortable and wouldn't have wanted, teachers teaching their kids about different sexual stuff. We still went to sex ed class. How do you make room for diversity of belief? Because you can't dictate belief. I mean, I think this is really a fulcrum, like a pivot point for us in how do we all get along? Because that same age where your kids are becoming, you know, sexual beings and they're walking into an identity that, you know, may change later, may not. That's also a point in time where you cannot, I homeschooled for a year, and I will tell you, my kids talk about it, we joke about it, you know, well, I don't know if mom taught me this or that, but I would not want to be homeschooling a high school child, because there's so much, like, am I an expert on chemistry? Am I an expert on calculus? So they need a really well-rounded and full of expertise instruction in these same years where parents get uncomfortable if we've got, you know, different values in school. How would you handle that? What would you want people to know about you? How would you talk to both conservative and liberal parents with different values about having public schools welcome everybody and provide the best education?
So, wow, that's a lot. That's a lot.
I know it's a lot. No, that's how I am. I'm sorry. I'm a lot.
No. But here's the thing. You said all that, and I have a very simple one. There's a couple of simple solutions.
Yeah.
One, I believe that all of us as parents want the best for our children.
Yeah.
And we got to start out right there as a simple thing. We all want the best. So as much as people want to try to divide us on issues that we all want the best for our children. Let's start right there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these issues that end up dividing us usually end up being one-off issues or no issues at all. They will bring these culture type issues into the fold, but these issues aren't even happening. There are a lot of issues that are happening, so-called happening nationwide, that aren't even happening here.
Right.
In Sarasota.
So a lot of it is being exaggerated and isn't
right. It's not
real.
Happening. So, like, let's step back and let's actually
make sure
that, mm-hmm. you know, if a bathroom issue is happening, if a kid is playing the trans sports issue. Like, let's step
back.
There's
not that many.
Is this issue actually happening here in Sarasota? Mm-hmm. No. So why are we talking about it? We need to get back to making sure that we want the best for our children and that every child has a safe environment here in Sarasota schools. It's mm-hmm. it's simple. Like, we make things so difficult. Honestly, and let me just talk and let me get a little something off my chest here, is mm-hmm. that we as adults make children's lives more difficult a lot of the times in the schools. The children have no issues with the things that we talk about. They have no problem with their other classmates who they go to school with. Whatever they do, whatever they lean towards, whatever they're doing, the kids are just like, hey, that's just such and such, and that's what he does. And mm-hmm. I'm fine with it. It's not until the parents or the adults get involved that we get just so outraged by, this is going on in the schools, this is going on here. And honestly, the children have no issue with it. They are fine. We just keep stepping into it and making it more difficult. It's okay. Simple.
So, you know, from time to time, I think there are real issues, but I do take your point that we have been in a time where things have been exaggerated and inflamed for the purpose of scoring political points.
It's by design. It's by design.
Right. Yeah, it is. And I can tell you that most of us know somebody whose sexuality is different than a heterosexual, right? Heterosexual. And we love those people. They're our family. They're our friends. So to me, one of the biggest caveats is I know conservative parents who have gay children, and they want their kids to be respected and not bullied. And, you know, I wonder, for me, especially when I see, you know, we go back to Bridget Ziegler, because she's really, by her own choice, has made herself an example of this. But it's like, where but for the grace of God go I? What happened to that? If you're going to be embracing these values that are particular religion or particular political bent, isn't that part of a Christian value? There but for the grace of God go I?
Yeah, I can't.
And what
I
if
can't
it's your
yeah.
kid?
Yeah, I can't. You know? I can't speak for Bridget Ziegler. Like I said, for me, I believe that all children deserve to have the best opportunity possible in a safe environment. Like, whatever her values are, or her values, this is what I believe. Every child deserves that opportunity.
Mm. So tell me, if you're elected to the school board, what are your
Wait, I got to correct you. When I'm elected. we speak of positivity in this campaign. When I'm elected.
Well, I'm the interviewer. I say if, but you can say when. So I respect that. So let's say you're on the school board. What are your top three goals?
My top three goals are, first and foremost, I believe that all our children should be on or above third grade reading literacy levels. I believe that all our high school students should be college or career ready when they graduate high school. And I believe that all our teachers and students should be shown respect, and we need to make sure that we're supporting them.
Okay. How do you do that?
So as far as making sure third grade reading literacy levels is, we need to make sure that we're investing in our children at a young age. We need to make sure that we are utilizing every resource possible, so that if we see a child who's struggling with reading, we need to make sure that we are putting that child and giving that child the best opportunity to succeed. And there's many programs, resources that we have within the district and with organizations outside the district, who we have seniors who come into classrooms and volunteer to read to our students. That's an amazing program. Mm. We need to lean into programs like that. So if we're facing staffing shortages, we need to reach out to the community. The community is more than willing to help us in this fight right here. Yeah. As far as college and career readiness, I feel that once a child gets into school in ninth grade, let's get a plan so that by the time they graduate, they know exactly what they're doing. The plan doesn't begin once they receive the diploma. Let's figure out what you want to do, but most importantly, what you might not want to do while mm-hmm. you're in school. Mm-hmm. And as far as showing support for our teachers, our students, and our staff, we need to make sure that we are not overwhelming our teachers and allowing them to be able to be teachers, what they went to school for. You know, right now, if we continue to disrespect our teachers and not support them, we're going to lose our great teachers that we have here in Sarasota. So we need to make sure that we're showing them support along the way. We cannot afford to lose any teachers here in Sarasota. They spend more time with our kids than we do at times. What I do, I'm not sure. This may not be appropriate sometimes. I know it's usually reserved for military members. But whenever I see a teacher, I'd say thank you for your service. Because they do. They are superheroes. It's a true service of what they perform and what they have to deal with our kids. And then go home to have to parent their own kids.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I talked to my sister. She teaches special education in a Connecticut school system. And she's in high school. And does she earn her money? I swear.
Oh, special ed teachers, definitely.
Yeah. And she floats, you know, she basically is in, you know, the regular classroom, so to speak, with special ed kids. And so she'll kind of co-teach and make sure that the examples given, you know, make sense to her kids. And she sees this divide that's happened with AI or with, you know, screen time. We are in a very challenging time. But what kids need, you know, and this is where I have so much respect for the work that teachers do. I mean, my dad was a professor. My mom was a substitute teacher. I look at what my sister does, and I agree with you. It's a calling. At the end of that, nobody goes into teaching to be rich.
Nope.
Actually, one of the most foul things I've ever seen in politics was Chris Christie tell a teacher that, well, you didn't go into this to be rich, did you? Like, I just was like, wow, dude. And I liked him. I was like, well, how could you say that? Yeah. But at the end of the day, if you're a teacher, you know that you've made a difference. You know that you've made a difference. And so to see a school board become, a stage for such, for me, as I'm watching political theatrics and being used as a prop in national TV shows and as this, you know, for people's careers rather than truly service, has been very disappointing. So it's great to be talking to a candidate who is talking about changing that and who has four kids who've gone through our public schools. So I wish you the best of luck. How do people find out more about your campaign?
So if you want to find out more about my campaign, you could go to electjimmyglover.com. Electjimmyglover.com.
All right.
Volunteer. If you'd like to donate, that's where you go.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll be seeing more of you because this election is in August, really.
Can I say one last thing? This is going to be the most important school board election in Sarasota County history. We're going to need everybody to turn out like it's a presidential election because the stakes are just that high.
And they have to turn out in August.
In August. It's the August 18th election. And what I just one last thing I want to say is this. When you're talking about the school board majority, I want them to stop wasting our time. We are going to these school board meetings. We are sitting there for 2 and 3 hours, and nothing is getting accomplished. Stop wasting our time. Stop wasting taxpayer money and start doing things that are student and teacher focused. When I'm on that board, that's going to be my focus.
Okay. All right. Jimmy Glover, thank you so much for joining me. Everybody, you've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1, LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Everybody, you need to make sure you're registered to vote. Go on your county supervisor of elections page. Make sure your registration is up to date. If you want an absentee ballot, you need to request one because those requests expire now after a couple of cycles. I thank you so much for listening. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.